So, bhakti is meant for everybody. There are no qualifications needed. Only one qualification. I want to become a devotee of God. We discussed one important point that we already have one. Bhakti means what? Intense attachment. We have the intense attachment. And if we do not have, we have to grow intense attachment. When you read spiritual books, usually they advise you give up attachment. What does that mean? Can you live without attachment? It's impossible. What does it mean really? On the first stages, you deepen your attachment. If you can love somebody, something, anything to the maximum extent it is possible, then only you have something to turn towards God. I give the example. You have a torchlight, and it is battery is at 5 watts. It's very dim light. Wherever you take it will give only 5 watts. You take it to the toilet, 5 watts. Take it to the shrine room. This is God's room. I will increase to 500 watts. It's not going to happen. This is an issue most people don't seem to not understand. Why God created this universe? Why did He create Maya? Maya means what? Attachment. Maya means attachment. But attachment to what? Very ephemeral objects, changing objects. But why did God create? After all, we came from God. We are children of God. Does God want our destruction? Or does He want our betterment? So, say, my child, you want to be very strong and you grow your muscles. What muscles? Muscles of love, attachment, mind. Now, pay attention. What happens when the mind grows attachment to some person or to someone? Instantaneously, we are prepared to offer our life for that object. If somebody loves money, for the sake of money, he would give up. Is like some problem comes. He says, I will kill you if you don't. Many people die refusing to hand over their money because what do they love more? Money. So is it a good thing or bad thing? It's very good. Why is it a very good thing? But you have got the power to attach yourself. The next thing needed is to redirect it towards God. People do not understand. If you don't have the power of attachment, you will not have also the power of
detachment.
Also, detachment means what? Withdrawing.
Attachment from worldly.
Attachment to one object and directing it towards another. There is nothing called, I don't love anything. Such a psychology is absolutely wrong psychology. So, what is detachment here means? This is not valuable. But this is more value. And the moment we do not have any attachment, we will die. Simply we will be ill and die. Because what is hope? Tell me. You think the psychology of hope. Hope means what?
Something
you
like
have something, you are very much eagerly hoping that I will get it. Suppose a person becomes hopeful. Do you know what happens? His prana will just dry up. He will die. This can happen only under one condition. So therefore, the mother says, if a man doesn't have any desires, then he becomes stupid. That very moment. His body will fall in. Our body can remain only when there is a desire. Desire to eat, to desire to drink, desire to enjoy, desire to sleep, etc. So, is it a good thing or a bad thing? It's extremely good. So what am I trying to convey to you? Develop as much attachment as you can. Then there is hope we will become greater devotees.
Attachment towards God.
Yes. So then conditions are. That is what I am trying to explain it to you. Suppose you love your husband, or if you have child. Every good wife or good mother is prepared to give up her life for the sake of the husband or child. That means what? That person So all life is in the other object. So now this is called love. We call it attachment because it is not for God. It is for worldly object. But the point here is the person, he is ready to sacrifice his or her life for the sake of the beloved object. Now just imagine, will this person do any harm to the person whom he loves? Will this person destroy the object of his love? Let it be anything, sofa, house, car, and a garden, plant, anything. On the contrary, he will try to protect it. So if a mother has a child, the mother has a tremendous love for the child, then the mother, what is the first thing the mother does? I put it in a funny way. Suppose a child is there, loved very much by the mother, and it is a weak way. The child has to go to school, doesn't like to go, says, "Mommy, mommy, do you love me?" "Yes, my darling. How much you love me? I'm ready to give up. So, will you permit me so that I don't need to go to school?" Which mother will do that? If a neighboring child comes, says, "Do whatever you like. I'm not interested in it." Her own child, because she loves, if necessary, she will give a slap and drag the child to the school. Why does she do that? Why does she punish the child? Because of her love for me. That means my child doesn't know what is good for him. So I know, but I will do everything. Even if he hates me, I want him or her to become better. So what am I talking about? If we want to turn all our attachment to God, first thing is, we must have the power of attachment. That must increase. How do we increase? This is the world provided by God for experiment, gymnasium. Second, if we love ourselves, then we will not spare ourselves. I give just not example. The mother will not spare the child. Even if the child says, "I hate you, because I am not understanding. Why are you not allowing me to bump this and to play and to be happy? After all, you want me to be happy." Mother says, "No, you don't know what can give you happiness. If you go through this school, it become well educated, get a better job, then the happiness which you derive then will have no comparison with the happiness you are deriving without going to school." You understand now? Apply it to ourselves. What is it? I want to love God. And what does that mean? I want to love myself. If I don't love myself, then I will not wish good for myself. Are you following? Loving God means what? I derive the greatest joy from God. I wish to become a great devotee of God. Therefore, so do you wish your neighbor should be loving God, or you want to love God? So that means you love yourself. That is why you understand loving God, becoming a bhakta, is the greatest benefit anybody can do to anybody, including ourselves. So what is the psychology I am trying to explain? If I turn to spiritual life, who gets the benefit? Others will get, or will I get first? I am the first. So why do I want to? Because I love myself. When I love myself, I don't want to be harmed. I don't want to suffer. I want to be always happy. This is the characteristic of true love. I don't want my beloved object to suffer and to undergo any difficulty. I want that beloved life where to be very, very happy life, isn't it? And that is the understanding. If we go to God, who gets benefit? God or me? Who gets the benefit? That means now I am mortal, now I am ignorant, and now I am not that happy. If I realize God, I will be beyond the pale of death, I will never have any ignorance, and I will be forever happy, isn't it? Are we doing this for this sake or for God's? Loving.
For my sake.
For our sake. And there is a law. We will never do it to anybody. That includes ourselves. Unless we love that sin. So, that if I want to be bhakta, that shows that I love myself very deep. And I want my welfare. And I want my future good. I don't want to go through this samsara bandhana. Therefore, I want to become a devotee. The speciality of bhakta is something different. Speciality of Raja Yoga to get out of bandhana. The speciality of Jnana Marga, he wants to become free, mukta, and get out of samsara. The speciality of Karma Yoga is to become Naishkarmi. That means it's opposite. The Karma Yogi, what if Karma Yogi means? A sadhaka who uses karma to approach God. What is his purpose? One day I will become perfect Karma Yogi. That means what? Then thereafter, I don't need to do any work. He wants to, in other words, be free from all work. Whereas Bhakta is the only person who says, I don't want to be away from Bhakta. If I get this much bhakti, my thirst for bhakti will increase. I want this. I want only bhakti. Therefore, Narada himself said, in every other yoga, mukti is the goal. In bhakti yoga, if God comes and says, I will give you mukti, he says, no, I don't want to be given. Mukti means what? Then there are times I will not know who you are, who I am. I want to know. I am a devotee, I am your child, I am your servant, and I am your friend, and you are my brother. I want always to enjoy. This is beautifully expressed to Bengali, because Bengal had produced one of the greatest devotional literature. Ami chini hote chayna, ami chini kyote chayna. I do not wish to become sugar. I want to eat sugar. So, after realization, then he said, okay, what is mukti? I will become one with God. So, that is fine. But now I know what it is. Now I want to come back and keep God in front of me and one looking at him enjoying. This is the only goal of every bhakta. You ask him, do you want to become with your chosen deity? One. He says, no. I want to keep a little distance so that I can go on staring at him. This is the speciality of bhakti. First point we already discussed. We already have the bhakti. What is the problem? First of all, it is scattered. Bhakti means, I'm talking about attachments. We already have attachment. The attachment to our body, attachment to our good name and thing. That is why somebody criticizes you, you get hurt. Yeah, my sister, worthless person, that this person is criticized. So criticism, you understand, it doesn't come and slap, doesn't take a knife and injure you. Just some words. Hearing that sound, then you become back. Egoism. So we are all, that means what? We are all terribly attached to our own body. Name and fame belongs to whom? Body or not?
Not the worst.
It is because if there is no body, where is name? So you say that, you know that person, oh my God, such a famous person. And where does he live? I don't know. How does he look? I don't know. What is the information? I don't know. Till such a person who doesn't exist will have name and fame. The moment name and fame means, oh, Jawaharlal Nehru, Mahatma Gandhi, like that Einstein, or Shivaji, any Guru Nanak, any person, we must know, oh, this is the person who is such a great person. So without body, name and fame are totally meaningless. How are you going to give name and fame to some person who is not known at all? You follow it, is it? Without body, name and fame are totally useless. Without body, this knowledge is totally useless. Think a little bit deep. Suppose Einstein, what is Einstein? He is a mine encyclopedia of scientific knowledge, isn't it? So suppose he is dead. Where is the knowledge now? He had all the knowledge in the mind, but without a body, how are you going to access that? You understand? Body is the only thing we need. You heard about a saint, great saint, say Thakur, Tirunathar. And how does he look? Nobody. Where does he live? Nobody. What is his life? Nobody. What is your guess about his spirituality? What is your idea of his spirituality? Absolutely nothing. Therefore, without the body idea, this whatever bhakti, jnana, knowledge is all totally useless for us. That is why we need a body. The moment the body is there, either good or bad, for both bodies needed. There is a wicked fellow and he is terrible. And where is he? What is his name? How does he look? I don't know. That means it is a formless. If it is formless, it's totally yes. A devotee never wants to think of God in that way. I want to see you in front of me, and then I want to adore you. So we have all the equipment. What is the problem? It is scattered. So what is the task now?
Channelize.
We have to recognize. And there also, I told you in the past also, but I will tell you, because I talk these things to so many people, I don't know whether I spoke to you. With regard to any object or any person in this world, so I use the word object. Means, if I say it is a person, it is only human. But if it is, I say an object, it could be anything. It could be a plant, it could be an animal, it could be poetry, it could be anything. So, if we love some person or some object, and we love many things, do we love every object exactly in the same way? Or do we give what we call an hierarchical value, mathematical value? This person, I love 90%. This person, I love only 80%. This person, 50%. This person, 30, 20, 10. Minus also is. That means when you happen to see such a person heading towards your house, you will simply go the other way around. Why? So if you love somebody, love, knowledge, and happiness. These three are interrelated. Love, happiness, and knowledge. You have to understand it properly. This is because this applies also to God. You don't know what is the God. And you say you love. Can you be happy without love? So love, knowledge, and happiness are synonyms. So first comes knowledge, then comes happiness, then comes love. Try to understand. Simple example. You don't have any knowledge of, say, Mysore Pak. Can you love it? To love it, you should have knowledge of. What knowledge? So somebody told you, it makes no impression. You have seen it, it makes a little bit impression. It looks like. But you will not love it. The moment you take a small piece and put it on your tongue, and then you know, you have the real knowledge. The moment you have real knowledge, what is the knowledge? This is a very happy, good, sweet. Without that happiness, you will not love it. You will have knowledge, but knowledge is useless. So, sukha and dukkha are considered the value judgments. Our whole life is only working through these value judgments too. Where there is happiness, we run towards. Where there is no happiness, we run away from it. These are called value judgments. What you study, what job you do, what type of people you mix with, what type of objects you have or you want to possess, everything has to be measured in these only two terms. What are the two terms?
Dukkha.
Whether it will contribute to my happiness or not. So our activity is geared towards two. If it is happy, we'll go towards two. That is called pravruti. If it is good, if we have knowledge that it is going to give me unhappiness, all our endeavor will be to escape from it as much as possible. Whole life, including breathing, including your sitting. Why am I going to such great depths? This is the foundation of understanding any type of yoga. You are sitting there. There is a depression. Imagine there is a depression there. And something is breaking you. What will you do? Automatically, you will shift your position. Either you go this way, that way, back side, front side, to avoid that breaking sensation, isn't it? Many times we are not aware of. Okay. It is a hot day. And you are sitting there. And you are feeling very hot. And you can see that the fan is this. So, unconsciously, your tendency is to move directly under the fan to get a little more breeze. Now, this example is enough. Whole life you analyze only to, we love only, first of all, we must have knowledge. Secondly, you must have that experience. But experience, sukha and dukkha. There are problems. Our love of hatred comes into that. If it is happy, happiness through production, our love with. If it is not happy, on the contrary, unhappy, then it is our effort will be to escape that. Even if it comes, we want to escape. This is the first law, very important. The second law is that even though many things are there which give us happiness, and there are many things also which give unhappiness, we assign to each one an hierarchical value, mathematical value. This is the best, most happy today, 95%. This is a little less, 90%. How do we know? How do we know? The other way around us. This gives me 5% unhappiness. This gives me 10% unhappiness. And this gives me 20% unhappiness. Imagine. So now I will give you an example. Suppose you attend a buffet dinner and there are 100 varieties of things and you already have experience of many things. So what will you do now? First thing, what will you do?
What I'm already aware of, I go for that.
Whatever you know which will give me the highest value, that would be your first preference. You will go with your plate and first thing is you will take that one. Suppose it is there, but it is some fellows came and finished it. Then you opt for the next best, 90%. Though you have, if you don't see, you don't regret. But if you see and it is gone, then you regret it. Why did I not come 5 minutes earlier? I could have been there.
See how thought process go on.
Like that, we give hierarchical value to objects, to persons, to situations, to jobs, to books, and to sofas, to carpets, to phones, anything you name it, there is an hierarchical value. On the other side, suppose the doctor tells you to eat bitter gourd. There are varieties of eating bitter gourds. If you eat any time Andhra bitter gourd preparation, you will never go back to Mysore Pak or Rishabhi. Rajana knows that?
Yeah, I was in Andhra PG, so...
See, they take out the inside, scoop out the inside, and then they will stuff all very tasty things. And then tie it with a thread, and including gourd, jaggery, also will be there. And then they will fry it in rich people with ghee, otherwise with oil. They tie a thread to keep that inside. It's called stuffing. A sandwich. And once you put it inside your mouth, you say, I don't want anything else for today. Believe me, it is prepared properly. You will not want anything. So what is the problem? All bitterness is gone. Sweetness is gone. Inside stuff is very tasty. And it is fried in ghee. Anyway, this is an extreme example I'm giving. But I have to give example of the good. There are two ways of eating bitter gourd. One is just to run. Another is a little boil so that it is nicely boiled. Third is that you add a bit of salt to the second hierarchical value chain. The bitterest is the just run.
Nice to prepare.
And the next is boiled. So I added a bit of salt. It is less bitter. And the third is even much less bitter, fried nicely with the masala and other. Now, what is the hierarchical value? This is 90% bitter. This is 80% bitter. This is only 25% bitter. If you have a choice, which one would you choose?
Least bitter.
Least bitter. This is what I am telling. So, two points we have more. With regard to any object, if we want to love something, love is the last character. What should be the first one?
Knowledge.
What is the second one?
Happiness.
It must be very happy or less unhappy. If we have to. And then the third one is love comes towards that or hatred comes towards that. We are suffering. Samsara means what? Raga and Vesh. Bhakta means who? Yogi. Bhakta means yogi. Yogi means who? He said, I have to treat both Raga and Dvesha equally. It is very easy to give up what we get, but very difficult to give what we have. So that is why, with regard to God also, apply the same principle. What is the principle? That first of all, knowledge. Where from do we get knowledge of God? Because we don't see God. We don't experience God. How do we know?
Scriptures.
From the scripture. But how do we know scriptures are telling the truth? Then we have to see somebody. I tell you something very interesting. Somebody started criticizing Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna. Oh, he was a hypocrite. He enjoyed things and he's a worldly man like them. Misunderstanding. He's listening. You can't do anything. So one of our sons confronted him. Said, so, do you believe in the law of cause and effect? He says, yes, of course, I am a modern man. I believe in the law of cause and effect. If there is an effect, there must be cause. And if there is a cause, there will be
effect.
What is the relationship? This is manifesting, unmanifested and manifested. Seed means, cause means unmanifested. Waiting for manifestation. Effect means already manifested. So we don't see both. We see only either the manifestation or the cause. So you say that Sri Ramakrishna was a hypocrite and all that. That means you are saying he was not a sannyasi. Hypocrite means he was a worldly person. He was a sannyasi. He was not a sannyasi. He said, look at the Ramakrishna. There are thousands of people who have renounced their so-called worldly prospects, joined the order, became monk, leading very wonderful life. How can a man who is a hypocrite inspire so many? A hypocrite will inspire and produce whom?
Hypocrites.
Only a genuine sannyasi can inspire because there is something here. A fake musician will be found out very soon. Suppose somebody declares, I'm a great musician, and there will be sincere sadhakas who want to learn music. They will go. The moment he opens his mouth, these fellows know perfected. He doesn't know anything. Only they say sorry. Sorry to you. Because all your knowledge is only sorry knowledge. You understand? It's the seventh scale.
Maybe the first
one. He has not gone beyond three. That is called the sorry knowledge. So, anybody can find out a hypocrite very soon. If this man were to be a hypocrite, then he would have produced only hypocrites. But so many genuine sannyasis are there. That means he was a real sannyasi. This is the truth about. If the seed is burnt out, it will not produce anything. If the seed is live only, it will produce. So by the effect, you can understand what song you come there with. This is true also. So why a person like me is attracted to Sriramakrishna? Am I a stupid fellow that I mistook Sriramakrishna as a great monk? But after studying also, I am still mistaking him only about a great monk. Is it ever possible? How long can I deceive myself or anybody? That means I know that he is a genuine. That's why we are attracted. So apply this to great people. How do we believe that God is through scriptures? And how do we know scriptures are right? There will be some people who follow the scriptures, study their lives. So we said four characteristics. Always happy, cheerful. They love everybody without any distinction. Who can love? Only a genuine spiritual person can love. And thirdly, a person is prepared to give up anything, his own life, for the sake of others. And fourth characteristic is he is samadarshi. He loves everybody equally. Atma upamyena sarvatra samam pashti. Like himself. Who are you? Myself. Who are you? Myself. Who is a dog? Myself. Pavahari Baba. You heard about Pavahari Baba? Who is a great yogi. Swami Yatananda met him. And then he wanted even to take initiation from him. But of course that did not happen. You never heard about Pavahari Baba?
Yes,
a great soul. What happened one day? This Pavahari Baba used to keep some dry chapati. And he used to put it in water and use a little bit of ghee so that it is eaten. So one day a dog came and it was very hard. It saw the roti, it took it in its mouth and was running it. What was Pavahari Baba doing? With a ghee pot. He was addressing Brahma. Is the roti might break your teeth. Let me put a little ghee. Genuinely, what was he looking at? It's not a dog. It is Rama came in the form of a dog. A thief came in the form of a... No. Rama came in the form of a... Thief. You know that story? Thief story?
In Gospel, it is there.
Gospel, I don't remember. But Swami Vivekananda says...
By the will of Rama. That one?
No. One Swami Vivekananda was wandering in Himalayas. He went, wherever he used to go, he used to inquire whether there is any great sadhu nearby. And they pointed out, everybody said, here is a great sadhu. So Swami Vivekananda went there, an old man, and he prostrated himself. And then he asked him, what made you a monk? Then that man told the story. When I was young, one day I was a thief. I went to steal something from Pavahari Baba. At night. So he made, there is a compound work, he made a hole and then he entered. Inside he found nothing much valuable, what we call, you know, some cooking utensils, etc. That was valuable for that thing. So he pondered them at midnight and was about to go away. These vessels moved with each other and made it. And the Pavahari Baba instantaneously woke up, saw the thief. Immediately the thief got frightened, dropped the bag there and ran up. Pavahari Baba understood in a twinkling of an eye. He took up the mote and ran after him and then caught hold of that thief. Kept it at the feet of that thief and said, Lord, please forgive me for interrupting your work.
So,
that thief, what type of life I am leading? And what is the statement? Genuinely, he meant it genuinely. The moment he said this, immediately he renounced the world, he fell upon me, went to Himalayas, and lived a genuine sadhu's life. And he was pointed out as the greatest sadhu in that week. So advised my devotees, if you want to steal anything, come from the ashram or a good chance you might become a sadhu in your next birth and life. So what is important for us? Very good. Wonderful. So what are we talking about? We talked about we bhakti is its own reward. And we are all potential bhaktas because we all have attachments already, but it is scattered. A little bit here, a little bit there. We have to gather it. And then when this attachment is directed towards God, that is called bhakti. We will discuss it later on. Another point we raised and said that for everything we come across and experience, we assign an hierarchical value of sukha and death. So for, we don't love everything equally. We don't get also everything equally. For that, I brought two concepts. What is it? Love is the effect of experience, happiness. And happiness comes only when there is an experience, which I call knowledge. So knowledge means experience, and we judge it. This is very happy experience. And then automatically, love for that object will come. Similarly, this is the knowledge, and this is produces only unhappiness. Therefore, we don't want. Life is only an activity avoiding what brings unhappiness and what brings happiness. Only they're single. In course of time, we will realize that we have to give up both happiness and unhappiness. So, if we are attached to happiness, it is called raga. If we are attached to unhappiness, we are attached. That is called dvesha. So why do I call it? We are attached to dvesha because it produces the deep thought in us. Raga also produces thought. Dvesha produces even greater thought. Therefore, it affects us. In either way, it affects us. It should not affect us. So bhakta means equally, I say, this is also prasada, this is also prasada. But it will come through. Then bhakti improves, increases, then only correspondingly we will be able to look upon both of them as equally valuable. Because it is this. The essence of what I said is that we have to develop tremendous attachment to things already that we know, so that that will be like a pole vault which, by which we will jump and throw back the pole vault, and then we will be go to the other side of the system. And we'll discuss it next week, next either Saturday or Sunday. And going out there.
Retreat
on the
stage. Because they are naming.
Huh?